welcome back to another episode of This Week on Channel 9. I'm Brian Keller.
And I'm Amanda Silver.
And we've got a lot in store for you. We're looking back on PDCs of years past.
And we're looking at how to do some prototyping using Sketchflow.
And we're celebrating a birthday in the tech community this month.
Cool. Happy birthday.
Yeah, but first, who is Amanda Silver? We've seen you on Channel 9 before.
I'm a program manager on the Visual Studio team.
Okay.
For several years, I was working on the Visual Basic language. So I did that for the 2002 and 2005 products. And then for the 2008 product, I was working on Link to XML, all of the integration in Visual Basic.
Nice.
And then since then, I've been working on Office programmability.
Oh, cool.
I've been doing both, servicing kind of updates for VBA, mm-hmm. For the upcoming Office 2010 release, but then also looking forward to the next versions of Office and what the programmability story will be.
Awesome. Well, we love your videos. I watch all the videos you do with Beth Massey. It's always entertaining, so definitely keep that stuff coming.
Cool.
So thanks for being on the show. And our top story, IE8, most secure browser, according to NSS Labs.
Huh. So, what do you know about that?
Running IE8?
Yes, of course I am.
All right.
Yeah.
Right on. Me too. This is really interesting. IE gets a lot of flack. Obviously, there's a lot of other popular browsers out there. I also run Firefox. A lot of times I need to look at how web pages render on different browsers, right? But NSS Labs went through and they broke down the latest versions of all the most popular browsers out there, so IE8, Firefox, Opera, etc. And they did some security testing to say, number one, how do these browsers protect the user from malware? And number two, how do they protect them from phishing? And according to the report, IE8...
protecting from phishing.
Exactly, yeah. But there's a lot of things that they're doing now, right? They're going out and they're monitoring. The report was interesting. They're monitoring, websites that are reported for phishing scams, and oftentimes these websites are only alive for about 50 hours, they say. So you have to be able to jump on that quickly and then update your databases such that you warn your users during the lifespan of these websites. So it's
interesting. It sounds kind of like search. Have you ever heard people talk about how your search engine can only be as good as the number of users that actually use your search engine?
Oh, sure.
Right? And so it's kind of like with your browser, your malware can only be as good as. Your malware preventers can only be as good as how many people use your browsers.
Right, exactly. So I thought it was pretty interesting. One caveat in here, and it's called out in here. So this is Giorgio Sardo's blog. He actually sits around the corner from me. He does call out that Firefox 3.5 was not tested. It wasn't actually available when they were making these tests. So hopefully Firefox would fare a little bit better there. But definitely good to see that IE8's kind of leading the pack there. So
awesome.
Setting the gold standard. And so so birthday here, or birth month, I guess.
Yeah, wow. It reminds me of the days when I was a Unix sysadmin.
Were you really?
Yeah, in college.
No kidding. Wow.
Yeah.
Where'd you go to school?
I went to Brown University.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
Go Brown.
Nice. So change directory and all those commands.
Yeah.
Nice. So what would you do? Just make sure everyone was usered on the system? Or what is there to administer of on a Unix box?
Oh, well, part of it was just kind of being the lab person.
Okay.
So that if people, in the computer science lab didn't know how to actually use a Unix machine, that I could help them figure out how to use it.
Nice.
And part of it was more, configuring new users and
gotcha.
That kind of stuff.
Running Unix update all the time.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So this is cool. So this is looking back on the last 40 years of Unix. Unix was conceived back in the late 60s. And so this was an article that really talks about the history of how it came to be. And what I thought was fascinating in this article was they talk about how kind of the core services, or what we think of now as the kernel, I guess, was kind of created in about a month while the one guy's wife was on the West Coast getting ready to have her baby. And so he's like, all right, finally, I've got some time to myself. I'm going to just go heads down.
Wants to use it productive time.
Exactly. We've all been there. We've all said, all right, I've got the house to myself. I'm going to be productive. But my list usually includes do my laundry and
taxes.
And taxes, exactly. It's not like start a new operating system. But but really fascinating article and nice to look back on.
Yeah, it was also cool to see in the article how how they actually got to meet the president, meet President Clinton.
Oh yeah.
You know, a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
And they got the Congressional Medal of Technology or something like that.
I didn't even know such a thing existed.
I know,
before
exactly.
This,
so yeah.
Maybe you'll get one of these days too.
Yeah.
For your work as a sysadmin. So Windows Azure. So we were talking before the show. You've been doing some Windows Azure development.
Yeah, just a little bit of mm-hmm. you know prototyping so that I can get familiar with the platform.
Nice. So I think platform familiarity is what we're all working on right now, just trying to come up to speed on Windows Azure. Certainly PDC 2008, we had a lot of announces come out around what we're doing there, and PDC 2009 promises to have a lot more in store. This is a sample application called Riviera. Sounds exciting.
Yeah.
That takes a bunch of the Windows Azure services and packages those up into one reference application that you can use and kind of break down and decompose and take those pieces and throw them into your own Azure application if you want to.
Yeah, so. It seemed like a pretty good, you know, sample reference application that showed you kind of how to leverage the Azure services mm-hmm. as well as plug it into a full client WPF application as well.
Exactly. So that's all available on CodePlex. And
yeah.
also,
the one thing that I thought was really cool about mm-hmm. that, if we want to go back real quick,
yeah.
was the Geneva services that they integrated into it.
Oh, right.
The federated identity stuff.
Right.
It's really pretty cool.
Is that something you're using as well?
Well, it's something that I'm definitely thinking about how to incorporate.
Yes. Okay,
yeah.
Gotcha. We won't push you for any disclosures here. And so speaking of coming up to speed on Azure, this is the Windows Azure Platform Training Kit. We've talked about this in the past. Actually, my group, DPE, puts these out. We have the Visual Studio Training Kit, and this is the Azure Training Kit. These always get updated, you know, every few months, and so the August update is now available.
Awesome.
So. Go download that. And,
happy coding.
Yeah, there's certainly lots of good stuff in there just for coming up to speed on the technology, hands-on labs, things you can do, building ASP.NET MVC applications on top of Azure, things like that. So lots of really good content.
Awesome.
So this is Greg Duncan's post about the Windows 7 complete exhaustive list of shortcuts.
Yeah.
So I love the shortcuts. I find myself using Windows key left and right a lot to kind of dock my Windows.
I
right
find
and left.
That I use the Windows key P.
Oh, presentation mode.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And actually, it turns out that I carpool with the guy that did that feature.
Oh,
one
no
of the
kidding.
Guys that did that feature.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So he's talked, you know, about how difficult it was to actually work with all the different OEMs that he had to work with to go through, you know, to make a consistent experience for
sure.
for presentation. So.
That's so cool. I wish I could say that. I wish I could just walk up to a girl in a bar and be like, Windows key P. Yep, that's me. Yeah.
Yeah, that would really get you a lot of girls.
Hey, who knows? So STM.NET. So we were talking about this as well. So you have an inkling of an idea of how to explain this?
Well, maybe. I mean,
okay.
you know, before I left the Visual Basic team to start working on Office programmability, I was actually working with the STM team somewhat to mm-hmm. try to figure out how we could incorporate some language constructs into Visual Basic to do software transactional memory. But
okay.
I don't know, the way I think about software transactional memory is, you know, when we're thinking about multi-core processors coming on the scene, we need to figure out, you know, how do we actually write applications that work, that, you know, can basically be concurrent
mm-hmm.
And take care of asynchronous, you know, basically do asynchronous programming.
Right.
And, you know, the hardware is one problem that's a very difficult problem unto itself. But then there's another problem, which is, well, how do I actually write applications that can be made to be concurrent and can run on those multi-core machines?
Right.
And so, you know, there's a whole field of study and research on how we actually represent that in software systems, and can we build, you know, runtimes and frameworks and language constructs and compilers
mm-hmm.
on top of, you know, something that at its base is you know, multi-tenant. It basically is, you know, can run on multiple cores, and you know, software transactional memory is one of those kinds of things. It's basically a way to say that, you know, the application that I'm running, it's all using transacted memory. So it's just like in a database, how we
right.
think about, you know, I'm actually executing a transaction.
Right.
This is basically constructs that will allow you to, you know, say, okay, I'm entering an atomic block
right,
right now. And then the other thing is, you know, it can actually help you do, you know, we think about the type system, as an example, is basically just an artificial software construct that helps you think about the abstractions that you're writing into your software.
Sure.
Right? And so then a compiler can come along and it can do compile checking and tell you, you know, when you've made errors in your logic. And so software transactional memory can also help you do those kinds of things. It can have, for the language integration, they can actually, you know, have additions to the language and to the type checking system and mm-hmm. the type system in general to that could surface compile errors, as an example.
Gotcha. So if you trigger a deadlock or something because another application is
exactly.
writing at the same time,
exactly.
then how do you handle that?
Well, not just how do you handle that, but how do you... You know, deadlocks are very hard things to find,
mm-hmm.
And, you know, they're very hard to debug.
Mm-hmm.
And so part of it is just letting you know before you actually run the application that you actually have that kind of an error
in your
application.
So throwing a warning and saying, hey, there's a chance of a deadlock, you haven't handled it.
Right.
Gotcha.
Or just having kind of an organized way to think about how your application can run on multiple threads.
Gotcha. So this is an interview that Charles did with the team that's building STM.net. We've talked about it a little bit in the past. There's currently, and what are they calling it, an experimental version of .NET Framework 4 Beta 1 out there for you to download. And so you can work with that from just C#, or is it C# and
VB?
No,
it's just C# right
now. Just C# right now.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha. So this is an interview with the team. They talk a little bit more about STM.net. And then if you're interested in kind of coming up to speed on STM.net, there's another interview that Charles links to that he did in the past, which kind of takes you from ground zero on a whiteboard and says, all right, what are we really talking about here?
Yeah.
So awesome. Good stuff there. So PDC Classics. How many PDCs have you been to?
Two, I think. Not
Two?
That many, yeah.
Gotcha. So
yeah.
This is as we're certainly looking at PDC 2009, it's just a few months away.
Three.
Yeah. Okay. So PDC 2009, just a few months away, and Robert Hess sat down with Don Box to talk about, to kind of reflect on PDC 2001. And so this was a really interesting article, really interesting video. They go back and they look at some clips from the keynote of PDC 2001 where Bill Gates is launching Windows XP.
Awesome.
And they did this great, you definitely check out the video, they did this great Space Odyssey 2001 throwback where Bill is getting ready to shut down DOS for the last time, and the DOS comes out and starts, you know, Bill, what are you doing, Bill? You know, just like Hal
awesome.
Talking to Dave. So I thought that was really cute. And also interesting to hear Don talk about how PDC has changed for him from being an outsider from Microsoft and being involved in the partner community and a trainer and things like that to being a Microsoft employee and then having to herd
that
cats and get right. everybody ready. So
right.
yeah.
The other thing that I liked about the video was just the demo of XP itself. You
oh,
know,
yeah.
They showed kind of this video, and there was kind of like a ticker going mm-hmm. along the bottom at the same time, and
yep.
there was all this animation for how, you know, videos would come out, and it kind of, you know, the transition to actually bring videos out and that
oh,
they
yeah.
could continue to run.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like, you know how you look back on, you know, DOS as an example, but then also just early days of Windows,
mm-hmm.
how you have like, you know, square text boxes and everything was kind of that horrible pixelated font.
Yep.
It's, you know, you look back on this video from 2001 and it's just amazing, like, how far we've come
oh,
since
yeah.
then.
Definitely. Yeah. I remember the very first time I saw a video playing in Windows 95. Actually, it was the one that shipped on the CD. It was the Buddy Holly video that they shipped. I don't know if you ever dug around the Windows 95 CD. They shipped all these videos, and I remember watching each one of those like 20 times. Like, I just could not believe you could watch a video on your computer. It was amazing.
Wow.
But this demo, that was kind of the keynote demo. So.
Right.
Amazing to see how far we've come. And now we're talking about building things in the cloud and
right.
all these abstract concepts. Right?
Yeah.
So really cool. And they're doing more of these PDC Classics videos too. So we'll let you know as they come out. So this is, speaking of debugging deadlocks, this is a SQL Server ebook that Greg Duncan linked to. And it's really targeted at the database administrator. And of course, we're talking about developer news. But the reality is that oftentimes, even as developers, we have to go in and back up the development database or...
Well, not only that, or just create a dummy development database so that you can actually, you know, create the app that's going to plug into it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So I would say that this might actually be more useful to someone who's not a DBA, who just occasionally has to dip their toes in the water and figure out how to do stuff, than to someone who's a DBA full-time that needs to do this stuff every day and just kind of has it, you know, on the top of their heads. So that was cool. And also, the other thing I wanted to talk about was this blog post by one of the SQL Server MVPs, Pinal Dave, who goes through and talks about how to use the SQL Server 2008 Profiler. And I was actually talking to a friend of mine who's a software developer, Ed Keim. He's been on the show before. And he's been spending the last week and a half troubleshooting a really pesky SQL Server problem. He's not sure if it's deadlocks or something else going on with his mirroring environment. But he's had to use a SQL Server Profiler. And he said, I love the profiler. It's awesome. It gives me all these tools and capabilities. But the problem is, it's like walking into a 747 cockpit.
Right.
And that's coming from someone who's a developer who's used to Visual Studio, which we normally refer to as a 747 cockpit. And so I just thought this was a good article to link to if anyone needs to go through and actually debug and troubleshoot a SQL Server 2008 session. This is a great way to kind of come up to speed on the profiler. And Pinal has actually promised more blog posts in the future that expand on this as well.
Awesome.
So, TechNet Script Center. So you mentioned VBA, so this is near and dear to your heart.
Not exactly, because this is mostly based in VBScript.
Okay.
But still, you know, I still need to work on that sometimes. It seems, you know, for an admin, it certainly seems pretty helpful to have all of these scripts, you know, that I can go and say I want to accomplish this particular task, and it tells you exactly how to do that particular task.
And again, even if you're not just an IT administrator, sometimes developers want to take advantage of this too. So
totally,
leverage PowerShell scripts in your setup.exe or something like that, right?
Yeah.
And so this isn't new. This has been around for a while, but Scott Hanselman actually tweeted about this week, and it's the first time I had seen it. So if you go out to TechNet and search for the Script Center Gallery, just thousands of scripts up there, and a lot of these actually come from the community as well. So a good place to let the script kitty in you run wild. So Physics Helper. So this is, I don't know if you've ever seen any of the show-off events that Dan and I did.
No, I never saw that, but this seems pretty cool.
Yeah.
You can basically create, you know, a game or something like that with full physics.
Exactly. And
it's
got ragdoll physics. And so this is Andy Bolu. Sorry, Andy, we never are going to pronounce your name right. But he's created this this physics helper library that helps you build these games. And he's got a lot of really cool sample games together. And he said that, you know, for a while he's had providing WPF support on his backlog. Currently, it just supports Silverlight. Finally, he got someone from the community that actually went back and ported all of his libraries to work with WPF.
Awesome.
So now you can also build these applications to run in WPF as well. So congratulations to that, Andy.
Or PC games.
Exactly, yeah.
Or simulations, I suppose.
Yep. So Sketchflow.
Sketchflow,
so
yeah.
You're a big fan.
Well, I've been using it a lot this week because I've been doing some prototyping for a future version of Office and Visual Studio.
Okay.
So, it was pretty easy to pick up. I had started with Expression, you know, probably I started with that last year or something like that.
Okay.
And, you know, within maybe a half a day in Expression, I was able to, you know, figure out the rough basics and, you know, create some simple animations. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, I put it away for a long time because,
sure,
you know, I didn't need it all the time because I'm not doing designing or prototyping all of the time.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, just very recently, I had to do a lot of prototyping to describe, you know, a product vision, basically.
Oh, cool.
So I took, you know, with Expression Blend, what is it?
Three
now. Mm-hmm. It came out with this great feature set called Sketchflow, which is kind of like a configuration of Expression Blend that allows you to do prototyping very easily. And so, you know, I could basically just start with all of the things that I'm familiar with in Expression.
Mm-hmm.
I can drag and drop buttons on. I can do animations. I can use, you know, more sophisticated controls like, you know, drop down menus,
sure,
or radio buttons or whatever you want to use.
And you said you can even data bind those as well.
Yeah, and you can data bind them just like an Expression,
yeah,
because it is, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then the Sketchflow features, you know, basically make it easier to do actual prototyping. So instead of actually creating an actual app that you're trying to design,
right,
you can actually, you know, say, no, you know, I don't know exactly how this app is going to work, but I'm going to basically sketch out how the app's going to work.
Right.
So I can create, you know, screens that allow me to flow between between different, you know, kind of like storylines in the mm-hmm. in the app that I'm describing. So mm-hmm. I might go from, you know, one designer into another designer, or I might go from, you know, one user interface into another user interface. But I can even create some interactivity with that user interface. Hmm. You know, it used to be, at least within Microsoft, a lot of the product planners and project program managers who do a lot of the designing for the user experience would mm-hmm. use PowerPoint to do that kind
oh,
of stuff.
Sure.
So we would actually, you know, PowerPoint and, you know,
Photoshop.
In the old days, it Paint, actually.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
so, you know, we'd actually do, like, our own pixel renditions mm-hmm. of, you know, how we wanted dialogue boxes or whatever to look. And then we'd use PowerPoint and animations in PowerPoint to actually start to kind of create some level of interactivity
right.
in there.
Right.
But it's still pretty limiting, and it takes so much work to actually do those kinds of animations.
Right.
And it's also like, you know, I'm kind of just pressing the space bar all the time to move to the next experience. So I actually have to do, you know, what would happen very often is, you know, we'd actually have a picture of a cursor. And we'd actually show where the cursor is going in the
oh, sure.
in the experience.
Yeah.
With this, because it really is a real application,
yeah.
but it's just, you know, kind of designed as a prototyping tool,
mm-hmm.
I can actually use my mouse to do this kind of stuff. And, you know, I can have the drop-down box drop down, and
right.
it actually can be data-bound, for
right.
example. And it has this kind of, you know, sketchy looking style set, so I can have, you know, these kind of outlined of
it looks like it's drawn with a crayon or something. Yeah,
yeah, I mean, it looks like that, but that's not actually a box, it's really a button that
oh, okay.
says click here on it,
and it's then, just stylized,
and it's just stylized,
that's
and so,
so
I
cool.
can easily transition it back into a WPF or a Silverlight you know, stylized actual application.
And so it's not just presenting, you can then turn around and share this, like what are the output options for, I finished my sketch flow, now I want to hand it over to the customer.
Well, so not only is it, you know, a set of assets, but it's a project that mm-hmm. can be imported into Visual Studio.
Mm.
But it also can be exported even into PowerPoint as well.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, for some of the super, you know, interactivity that I used to want to model, I would use even VB as an example of
oh,
how
sure.
to do it, right?
Hmm.
Because that was really, really easy, though. The WYSIWYG designers that mm-hmm. always came with VB,
mm-hmm.
You know, I would do that kind of modeling using VB. But, you know, it always was kind of sometimes it feels too real to see it at that level.
Yeah.
Sometimes you really want to see a little bit more of this sketchy look.
Right. Because otherwise, customer thinks you're done, and they don't need to pay you anymore, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Nice. So this in this week's news, this is an add-in that makes it easy for you to take Sketchflow models that you've created and publish those out to .NET Nuke, because you might have, I think the typical example here is, let's say that you are you know, a UI design firm, and you want to put together a bunch of UIs for various customers,
right.
and you want to have each one of your users, your customers, log in to a different area to see their sketch flows and have that all secured and everything. How do you do that? And so this is just an easy control that makes it easy for you to take those sketch flow models you've created and publish them to individual user accounts.
Awesome.
So that's pretty cool. And then also related to Silverlight, this was a flash SWF to Silverlight converter. So if you're going out and you've got a bunch of SWFs, then you want to convert those into Silverlight so that you can play them in a Silverlight video player. This is a free tool that lets you do that.
Awesome.
So.
Cool.
So time for picks of the week. So this is your first pick of the week.
Right. So because I'm working on, you know, Office programmability
mm-hmm.
going forward, you know, I'm very interested in what features people want in Office.
Right.
And so one of the product planners in Office had created this site, makeofficebetter.com,
mm-hmm.
That, you know, basically asking for feedback from customers to say, okay, what do you guys want to see?
Right.
And, you know, We've experimented with a lot of different ways to get feedback from customers. You know, not just experimented. I mean, we've incorporated it into our product development, right? We have like the Connect Bug system where where customers can report their bugs that they see in Visual Studio or in other products.
And those go straight into our bug database.
They go straight into our database. Yep. Yeah. But the thing is that, you know, most of the time, the bugs that come in are truly bugs that people experience either with shipped products or with beta products.
They're not feature requests.
Well, sometimes there are feature requests, but, you know, very often it's kind of, first of all, as an outsider to Microsoft, I would expect that it would be hard to find whether or not there have been other people who have made that same feature request.
I see.
Because there are so many Connect bugs in the database that it's hard to actually search for those things. There is a mechanism where you can vote on things.
Gotcha.
But it's kind of hard to use. And then the other thing is, because it's a suggestion, you know, and it's for a particular release, pretty often on the inside of Microsoft, it's kind of easy to say, okay, we weren't planning that for this particular release, you know, we'll postpone it or something like that.
But this site's really easy. I mean, the way that they've created the UI for this site, these almost look like user story cards that you might put on a whiteboard and then have customers come in and say, okay, tell us which ones you want us to focus on in the next iteration.
Totally, yeah. I mean, and the other thing, this was actually picked up by a lot of different media outlets, all the way to like law.com, for example. So, you know, not that surprising given that, you know, Office is mainly targeted at you know,
information worker,
non-technical people. So, you know, a lot of the requests are like, for example, this one, read PDF in Office.
Right.
But it's also interesting to see how many requests there are regarding programmability and, you know, what people would like to see in terms of building solutions on top of Office.
Right.
And so, you know.
Definitely.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah. Nice. So something that you're going through and mining and trying to figure incorporating in your product planning. So call to action is if you have ideas for Amanda and her
definitely.
Team, go to makeofficebetter.com. And so speaking of making software better, so this is Microsoft Bob is back to teach us a lesson. That sounds kind of like a menacing title, but no, actually, so it's Monica, what is her name? Where'd she go?
Monica Harrington.
Right. So Monica Harrington, I think she worked on kind of the PR for Microsoft Bob back in the day. And she wrote this fascinating article for TechCrunch that talks about kind of the lessons learned from Microsoft Bob. And, you know, Microsoft Bob's kind of unfortunately become this kind of laughing stock of Microsoft.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I was a J-Sharp product manager, so I totally understand and support that. But she had this really interesting post that talks about, hey, you know, you can make fun of it all you want, but here are some things that actually we did really well and some lessons that we learned, and maybe you can apply this to your own software. And so one of the things that I liked, especially since I came to Microsoft into the marketing team originally, was talking about how do you market your software on a shoestring budget. And she said they had a really tiny budget, especially compared to like Windows and Office at the time. And one of the things that they did was for CES, Consumer Electronics Show, they sponsored all of the napkins on the flights that were coming to CES.
Wow.
And so you're on your way to CES and you get this Microsoft Bob napkin and you're like, wow, well, if I'm already seeing ads and I'm still sitting in, you know, Iowa, then the, you know, actual marketing budget for this thing must be huge. And the reality was that's all they spent their money on, but you just sort of assumed that there were all these other places that they must also be spending their money.
I guess that's the benefit of thinking outside the box.
Yeah, definitely. So that was really clever. But the reality was that Microsoft Bob ended up getting so overhyped and become, I think it was on the Today Show and all these other places, and it was only version one, so it didn't really live up to the expectations that all of the tech-savvier people had of Microsoft Bob. And she said she really thought that, you know, by the time they got to version two and three, that it really would have sort of revolutionized the space that they were really targeting, kind of the home user that, you know, wants to think about their PC as just this other, you know, thing in their living room, and they don't necessarily take the time to learn how to use the computer, and she thought that they really would have gotten there. But definitely have a read of this article. She has some fun with it. And actually, a couple of the guys that worked on Microsoft Bob are now working at Valve Software and went on to actually co-found Valve Software, so makers of Half-Life. So it goes to show that, you know, there are a lot of really great, smart, talented people working on this project, but due to a lot of factors that, you know, hindsight's 2020, it just didn't fly like they wanted it to.
Right.
So.
Well, I'm sure we all have lessons learned from various projects
exactly.
in the past.
Exactly, J Sharp. So, so thanks for being on the show, Amanda, and
all right.
We'll see you next week.